everybody, it's Thursday, February 24th, and you are listening to Against the Current, brought to you by CITR 101.9 FM's News Collective. We aim to bring you an alternative and undercover current affairs coverage from Vancouver and Lower Mainland every Thursday at 3 p.m. We're based on UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. As it is Black History Month, today we are going to be talking about and highlighting anti-Black racism in Canadian schools and universities. We are going to be listening to Dr. June Francis speak on this subject. Dr. Francis is a professor at SFU, and in her talk, she addresses, discusses, and answers questions on the ways in which the history of Canadian institutions have contributed to persistent and contemporary anti-Black racism in the educational system. And here it is.
I want to start by saying, why do we have Black History Month? Why is Black history whited out of Canadian history? A question that we are all asking, that has been asked so many times. And the point I'd like to make sure that we start with is to truly understand this wasn't that we that Canadians forgot us, which they did, or that we suddenly, it just sort of happened by accident. We were intentionally erased from the history of this country in the same way that we have been erased from the history of the world in many areas, because it was an intentional part of the colonial strategy. This call for representation of Black history, it crosses the country from Ontario to BC. But I want to also remind us that this has been going on for the 40 years I've lived in this province, and that fight preceded me. From the time that we were liberated and before, we know slaves fought for the right to be educated. So this fight is not a new one, but it continues. What I'd like to do is talk a little bit about the roots of white supremacy and anti-Black racism in educational systems. Afua Cooper, who you see here, what a woman, what a visionary historian of epic proportions, who came to Canada from Jamaica, so one of my compatriots, and she said, to understand how the legacy of slavery is expressed, we must comprehend the systems of power and oppression and the agency of white supremacy that slavery was premised on. Our history matters, but it also matters for us to understand that these forces are reflected today in our contemporary society. The colonial educational logic, it was important to empower and to colonization, that white supremacy be indoctrinated in our educational system to justify the system it had, and that anti-Black and anti-Indigenous racism was intentionally there to support colonization. It was there to promote ideologies to dispossess Indigenous communities globally, including in Canada, and to justify Black subjugation and slavery. The narrative that we all can recognize is a narrative that said that the civilized, advanced, enlightened, and innovation that we see around us was always attributed to European sources. And so it's important to understand that if the society is racist, they were taught to be. some of the great luminaries that are still being esteemed in universities across this country, people like Voltaire, who otherwise advocated for freedom, had very racist views, because the Negro race is a species of men as different from us as breeds of spaniels are from greyhounds. If their understanding is not of a different nature from ours, it is at least greatly inferior. Hume's had something very similar to say, that we were naturally inferior to whites. And he went on to of course, obscure it by suggesting that we didn't have a history of brilliance and of science, because this didn't happen again by accident. And we see this reflected in our educational system. We see it across the globe. It's deeply embedded in the very pillars of what we are taught. All of us, by the way, most of us have had a deeply colonial education. I know that as a Jamaican, I was essentially taught to hate myself. Because you see, other knowledge systems were erased or denigrated. Historical, intellectual, and the cultural contributions of Africa and the African diaspora were sidelined. And why am I using this picture? Because on the right hand, my right anyway, is what we call European modernism. But on the left hand, it was in fact based on appropriating ideas from the continent of Africa. And yet that art, even today, is called primitivism. Our art is primitive, but the Europeans is modern. As Marcus Garvey reminds us, though, that this was an intentional act, because you see, it was to leave us untethered. Because a people, as Marcus Garvey says, without knowledge of their past, their history, their origin, and their culture is like a tree without roots. And many of our young people feel that way today because of this educational system. We know that education, however, is a force to be reckoned with, a critical force. As Nelson Mandela said, education is the most powerful weapon that you can use to change the world. But we're reminded that in Canada, anti-Black racism was institutionalized in segregated schools and racist city policies. As Hogan's Alley Society in our own province reminds us, the Hogan's Alley story. The town of New Brunswick, the first mayor, Gabriel Ludlow, was a slave owner who implemented some of the most draconian anti-Black policies. Queen's University, remember this name Queen's, because I'll come back to it at the end. It's a school of medicine in 1918, banned Black students. Black students were attending the school, and was only revoked in 2018, although in the 60s, they started to accept Black students again. Do not be confused. In Canada, segregation and exclusion of the bodies of Black people were policies. The founder of McGill University, as well, as we know, had slaves. And here is a history, I can't go through all of it in the interest of time, but to remind us that Black people protested this, to always remind us that we were resisting this always. And it was Leonard Braithwaite, the first Canada's first Black MPP, who moved the motion that ended segregation in Ontario. And remind us that the last segregated schools closed in Nova Scotia in, I listen to this clearly, 1983. Okay? This is not ancient. This is our history. And all of that was to create the myth of white superiority. And if you look at research and the ways we are, the what we know and what we don't know, and what it would have been to me as a child growing up in Jamaica to understand that while Cadbury and the Sloan family was attributed with inventing chocolate, that in fact, chocolate, the milk chocolate, what came from his time observing slaves and indigenous people in Jamaica. The dominance of Western ideals and values was not an accident. It was there to promote the supremacy, the belief that whites are superior to other races, and to justify why they should have control over racialized peoples and their property. So there was an appropriation of other people's knowledge systems and ideas, and that's that appropriation of our scholars carry on to today. W.E.B. Du Bois, one of the greatest sociologists, had to leave his university. And yet much of his ideas were attributed, other people were attributed to them. It was attributed to the white scholars. And only now are we reappropriating them to his intellectual tradition. We see this reflected today, so it's not just as history, it's our contemporary reality. And in Vancouver, we just saw this happen, where a racist video was published that caused great harm to this young woman. The school board of Vancouver did not know how to respond, or they did, but either way, it was a deeply harmful response. If it was intentional, well, then it was harmful. I suspect it's a lack of capacity that exists without Black teachers, without Black administrators to step in and to guide the process. I don't think people intentionally meant to harm this young woman. But de facto, she was harmed by a system that did not protect her. I know the school board thinks they tried, but if you don't have the capacity in it to address this young woman, what you do is create harm for her. And in the end, Vancouver student, she settled the human rights complaint against the school board. We all know that it would have been better had it not happened. But her mother and her resisted. And I'm so proud of that resistance. I'm so proud of this young woman and her family and all those who supported her. We see stories, the fact that in Vancouver in 2019 was a school with a plaque behind the basketball court. Now think about that. Let's put a plaque of Cecil Rhodes, who we all know was the architect behind the apartheid system and who has been discredited in South Africa and globally, Oxford University toppling a statue. And yet in Vancouver, we thought it was a great idea to put a plaque of him to remind the students playing basketball, many of whom were probably Black students, that you know what? There's a white supremacist looking over your shoulder. And when students asked for this plaque, when the parents asked for the plaque to be removed, the fight with a principal saying, I am in the middle. I really don't know who Cecil Rhodes is. I believe that she doesn't know. Of course, because it's Black history. Why would she know? And the Black bodies, they had to fight. I'm saying here, calls to remove the name in Winnipeg is still ongoing. I'm not sure what's happened there. But this is an ongoing fight. I know that there have been calls in Victoria to change the names of schools. And let me just say, what's missing this behind these stories is the work and advocacy that still primarily rests on the backs of the Black community. But the stakes are high for us. They're high. Our kids, our children, the next generation is dependent on us to create the flourishing so that we don't have this conversation. So this young man is not going to have this conversation sitting at a computer 30 years from now. This study in the Peel region, because you know what? We don't have research because we've not invested in Black research. We don't have race disaggregated data. So we actually don't know in our own schools in this province most of what we need to know. But this study tells us what we think is happening, that we all know as parents is happening, in fact. That this Black student was, that Black students are more than, not this one, I'm sorry. Black students are more than twice as likely to be suspended than other students. And they're suspended for things like wearing hoodies and hoop rings. And I suspect for wearing, they're here as Black people. More than 40% of all students suspended in kindergarten to grade three in the Peel region of Ontario were Black students. We destroy them when kindergarten. Black students are also streamed to fail. I know so many brilliant Black colleagues I have. Their stories of growing up in Canada, being streamed into non-academic field. And when I meet them, they're some of the most brilliant people I know. We have to also recognize that there is what I call de facto segregation, which is the way in which we organize ourselves and our institution, again, not by accident, because it's deeply embedded in the privileging of white and wealthy lives and the ignoring of all others. So it's not a surprise that when you looked at gifted programs, for example, in the city that I live, of Vancouver, you will see, as you look towards the western side of Vancouver, a high concentration of French immersion programs, as an example. But you will also see the same thing in what we call gifted programs. I know there's a move to change that title as well. But when you look in these special programs, they're definitely located for some groups and not others. This isn't the same thing we see in Ontario, where these art schools are nearly twice, there are nearly twice as many white wealthy students as other students. And of course you can imagine what the curriculum looks like as well. I suspect it is ballet and not African dance that's being taught. The curriculum needs to stop teaching Black inferiority. And this is done not only by exclusion, by who tells the story, but by how we tell a story. When I grew up, I thought William Wilberforce, was who ended slavery. That was the narrative I was taught. And what it did was make me feel so inferior that my own people did nothing. Sam Sharp, one of our national heroes, who as I got older was named as a national hero, led one of the major slave rebellions globally. And it was shortly after the slave rebellion that slavery globally in the British global colony for the British was abolished. We won our own liberation. He was hung. Many people like him did not survive. But this is a man of privilege. He could read, but he fought. The whites did not expect him to be this. They were totally surprised. They thought he had all the spoils, but he understood what he needed to do with that privilege to fight for our people. And when I look at these beautiful young children who are already growing up seeing this as their hero, it just makes my heart glow that we must have this for all our young people in Canada. Yet our heroes exist. The stories aren't told. We need to keep these stories coming. How many people have heard of Robert Sutherland? The same Queen's University I talked to you about. This Jamaican-born man who came to Canada, won 14 academic prizes, graduated in 1852. I want you to remember that date. Slavery was abolished when? Right? Not 20 years later, this man is graduating. I'm telling you, people were waiting to be educated. Most were not given the opportunity, and it's being denied to us to this day. He qualified in 1855 and was British North America's first known lawyer. But here's the thing. This man's endowment to Queen's University is why we have Queen's University today. Queen's University was on the precipice of financial ruin. And it was his contribution that saved the university. How come we don't know this? We need to tell these stories from Black perspective. This is Joe Fortes, who died 100 years ago yesterday. Oh, and we had a celebration here in Vancouver. But I had some things to say about that because so much of the time, this story was not told from our perspective. What I said I see here is a white Vancouver patting itself on the back for being generous to a Black man, as if he was some exception, that it was some exception that he was a capable man. I think his life is more representative of the ways in which Black people, despite the odds against them at the time, found ways to contribute to society while carving out a life, however horrific, and isolating for themselves. We must amplify our own stories, both historical and contemporary, like the Hogan's Alley displacement, but also the work of the Black community to bring back the joy by opening our first supportive housing, prioritizing Black people, Black Vancouverites, but also the long-term vision to return the stewardship of the Black community. In the interest of time, I will keep going. I won't dwell on some of these, but I must say that let's be clear, all of us as Black parents, as we have gathered together in different spaces, I've talked about the barriers, the exhausting processes that we have gone through as parents, where so much of our energies have been about resisting barriers, how our children, I know my own daughter, ended up in one of these gifted programs, but in fact, her own teacher forgot that she existed. The low expectations that we had to fight. We had to educate our children about Black history on our own to allow them to retain their self-dignity. Where one of my sons was told that his assignment on the Black history was not a Canadian topic, and how much that ruined him, his sense of his belonging. It didn't ruin him, but it ruined his sense of belonging in many ways. And we have to shore it up back at home and remind him and push him out and say, we keep going because we come from people, my husband and I, who resist. Pushed into stereotypic sports and discouraged from others. One of my sons wasn't good enough for badminton for some reason because he needed to play basketball. The ways in which they were not protected from racism when it happened. and ended up pressuring kids to conform. It's exhausting for parents. But you know, like everything else, the reinvigoration of the movements by the Black bodies that came out for Black Lives Matter protests globally has led to the movement for change. And I'd like, as we move towards this part of the conversation, to talk about some of the ways in which we have seen change across the educational sector. So for universities, suddenly we see the toppling of racist foundations, at least symbolically. So we see Ryerson University becoming ex-university until it can rename itself, as it recognized the deep harm it did to Indigenous people, who, by the way, while today is Black History Month and I highlight much of the ways Black individuals have been treated, make no mistake, this has also been the experience of our Indigenous colleagues, brothers, and sisters.
The haunting debut album Black Moon by Civic TV provides a cinematic backdrop, a modern-day symphony of the dark and light that is our collective reality. Take a listen to Black Moon, now available via Flemish Eye Records and on all streaming platforms.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial, open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
Interested in making radio? How about hosting your own show? At CITR, you can make your radio dreams come true by joining a collective. From news, art, sports, to gender empowerment, accessibility, music, and the BIPOC collective, there's definitely something for everyone. Explore new worlds both virtually and at our station, and be prepared to have a blast with some new pals. For more information or to join, please visit citr.ca/get involved.
Dalhousie apologizes for the racist actions and views of its founders. Where the Ludlow Hall at the University of New Brunswick, remember the Ludlow man, remember him? He had a hall named at the Faculty of Law. Oh yes. And we see steps taken, at least symbolically. In our own SFU, of course, us at SFU had to endure the fact that our team was named the Klansmen. The Klansmen. And the university insisted that it started with a C. And we wanted to know, when we went to play in the United States and we told everybody that the Klansmen were coming, what exactly were we to feel? Pride? And only after the Black Lives Matter do we see some of the response. In 2019, at the university level, scholars got together, many of them Black. And that's why research matters. People like Carl James, Melinda Smith, and others got together, not just Black, but racialized faculty, and decided to do some research to address the equity and meritocracy myth. And that's why they call it the equity myth. And what they found was that visible minority professors are both underrepresented among the professorate, but they also earn less. And that situation has not improved. In fact, has gotten worse. And this is behind the fact that for at least decades, Canadian universities have been claiming to put in place policies that they claim are promoting equity and diversity. We need to question the performativeness of these statements. And what they found, by the way, is that on average, racialized faculty published more articles and acquired more grants. And these are the measures of our success. There are some issues around other parts of the study, but these findings should lay bare and open up for us something that we need to really see, that racism, rather than meritocracy, is what is embedded in much of our institutions. If we look at the issue of Black students' representation and Black people, scholar representation, what do we find? But it is that when you look at the senior administration in universities, less than 1%, it's off the chart, literally, 0.8% are Black. Yet we're 3.5 and approximately we think we'll be 4% of the population of Canada, less than 1% of senior administration are Black. When we look at full-time faculty, same thing, 1.9% versus 3-4%. When we look at doctorate holders, something interesting starts to happen. Well, we're 3%. That cannot account for why they're only 1.9%. There are more doctorate holders than are getting jobs in universities. And when we look at graduate students, they're overrepresented. Our people are going to university, an undergraduate student. They're not necessarily getting through, and they're not necessarily succeeding in the educational system to be embedded there. I'm going to have to pick up some of the pace on this just because I want to make sure I leave time for question. Dr. Nelson, Charmaine Nelson, pointed out in a study she did that 0.5% of McGill's faculty are Black. And she's one of only 10 Black professors among 1,700. Remember, this university was founded on slavery. Remember that, because it's no accident. When we think about the hopes and aspirations and the defeat that we experience despite the enormous aspirations, when we look at the Black population, the yellow, all of us should just really recommit ourselves to our young people. Because in fact, Black aspirations exceed other aspirations. Would you like to obtain a university degree? Black students, 15 to 25, say yes by a higher margin than other students. But when you ask them if they think they're going to get it, look at the gap. It reverses because they're already knowing the obstacles they face. And when you look at how that translates into the fortunes, if you look at first generation immigrants who come to Canada and are in the low income bracket, and then you look at them in the second generation and the third generation, what you see is they start out in 29% are in low income brackets. And even in the third generation, it hardly dips to 24. But what do you see of other racialized groups who come to the other, what we call visible minorities groups? It goes from 25% when they arrive to 8%. They actually do better than the white population. So you have to disaggregate data. And when we talk about anti-Black racism being a particular form of racism, this is what it looks like. I will briefly go through this, my own journey. I won't dwell on it, but I have been in academics for a long time, and I just think it's important to be transparent so that I don't appear to be somebody who was exempted or I was somehow able to get through the system without all the hardships, because it's very important that we tell our own stories. So as I entered Canada, the first thing I did was I went to York University to do my business MBA. I must tell you, and this is not to brag, I graduated at the top of my class. I had first class honors. I was the kind of person in Jamaica that was expected to go to Oxford. I went to York University instead because this is where I immigrated. This was the opportunity available to me. And I tell you, I was coming out of the University of the West Indies where, you know, Walter Rodney was my hero, my father, Marcus Garvey, post-colonial. We thought Black Lives Matter, Black Power Movement was behind us. I thought I was coming to the multicultural Mecca of Canada. And what did I find? Whiteness and Eurocentrism in the university. I just won't go in. There were no African, there was no African intellectual tradition. I suddenly was dropped into a place, despite all of the Black intellectual knowledge that I had been exposed to in my home country, Jamaica, so I knew it existed. I came to a country where I was erased. I was also in a country where I was told, when I was, I won't go into it, it's a long story, but I'll just simply tell you this. The way in which the power operated to disempower me by saying to me, you're only a Black girl from Jamaica. No one will believe you, when I was challenged. I will say, I did not end that fight and succeeded in the end. But I had to fight. I was a young woman. I did not need that fight. Entering the workforce the same way, I had to erase my identity to become acceptable, to become an acceptable Canadian. I think of all the ways in which we create barriers in recruitment, training, and the support. And I'll remember, I put the Michelle Obama's picture here because of something she said. Michelle Obama went to Princeton, and she always said, the reason I went to Princeton was because University of Chicago, where I lived, looked like a place I didn't belong. And the only reason I thought I belonged in university was my brother, who was recruited on a basketball scholarship, went to Princeton. And I thought, oh, Princeton is a place where Black people go. And she talked about the ways in which Black support does not exist to aspire to the very highest level. On my own experience, a lack of Black faculty, I was told that I would not succeed if I did research on Black experience. That I had better get a respectable, but I will recount my experience at UBC. I went to UBC because I wanted to do a PhD. My husband, who is now my husband, was living here. I lived in Vancouver. I had a job here, and I went to UBC. And the person who met me started asking me if I understood how hard the PhD was, and that people like me should be thinking about other faculties than the business faculty, because it's really hard to get in. And I slowly recognized people like me meant Black people like me. I went on to get my PhD from the University of Washington. And I tell that story because I loved my experience there, but I must say the hardship, I was erased from my own country in order to get a PhD. I want to also say, but I entered a field of marketing and realized my own education did not address the ways in which advertising promoted racism as part of the foundation of the very discipline I was part of. I had to do this work myself. I collected this work myself, because I wanted my students to understand that when you see racism in advertising, it's because it was foundational to its intellectual origin. And if you look at this picture, think about science, the way Black people were excluded and used as guinea pigs. You think about AI, you think about the ways in which where racism is baked into artificial intelligence. If you think about engineering, if you think about, you just, have to think globally to recognize the arts, the Enlightenment, performance, the School of Contemporary Arts across this country, and the fight to get Black performance arts in them. It's because of deeply racist roots underpin much of the intellectual tradition. We must research these things, and we must be honest, and we must teach them. So this Scarborough Charter, as I come to the end, I'd like to talk to you about what I think is a hope, an opportunity. And as the Black Lives Matter pervaded the country and the world, the university Black professors suddenly looked at each other and said to each other, "We're all having the same experience. We all feel isolated. We all haven't been able to do the research to ensure that we can train the teachers of tomorrow. How do we expect teachers in the system to be able to teach our kids if there's no research, if we haven't taught those people to teach?" So there's a ripple effect from universities. We haven't thrived in these academies. And this, I love this student at Queen's, who said, "Why privilege permeates the walls, the books, the classroom, and everything that makes Queen's what it is." And so we got together over the course of many discussions, and I wasn't one of them, but many of my colleagues devoted themselves to act as an advisor. Simon Fraser University, I'll just shout out those students they sent in, but students across this province sent in their contributions. And this is the opening of the charter. These are the people who were the original signatories. And I want to call out Santuano and Joy, because they're in British Columbia, the University of Victoria, not at the signatory, I don't think here, but is thinking of it a lot or has done it. I'm not sure where it's at, but I'd say this relates to every college, every university, every tertiary institution, should be signing up to the Charter on Anti-Black Racism and Black Inclusion, because what it's calling for is that it's calling for Black flourishing. And let me remind you, it's part of a wider movement, because everything builds on each other. Remember in 2014, the launch of the International Decade of People of African Descent? We still are working to realize it in Canada and to really have the action plan that we should have started. It ends in 2024, but hopefully this is a beginning of change. We also must remember it comes on the heels, and the Charter respects the historic significance of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Because this fight is the same fight. And we support, acknowledge, and give primacy in many ways to our Indigenous people on whose lands we're on. And it also comes as part of the permanent forum, the establishment of a permanent forum of people of African descent in Canada. And it calls on universities and colleges to commit to promoting intersectional Black flourishing. It calls on universities to ensure they have race data. We don't even know how many Black students are thriving. How many are there? What's their experience? What about university administrators? What about faculty? What about staff? What about what happens to our Black students in the wider world? What happens 20 years from now? We don't know, because we don't collect data, because we don't collect, we're colorblind society. Sorry, I didn't mean to do that. I also wanted to say, we're talking to representation, because for many of us in universities, that's what we feel like. We feel so alone and separate. We feel like we're the only one in every space we go in. And so it calls on support for Black caucuses and Black student organizations. It also recognizes that research matters. And it calls on universities to have an action plan to support Black research, Black-led and Black subject matter research. But you know, a lot of granting of research come from federal granting agencies. So it's calling on them to support and change the way grants are given, because we know racism exists. With the Social Science Research Council, the Canadian Institute for Health Research, you name it. We don't get the grants, even though we get more than anybody else, but often we're excluded. We get, meaning we overperform on what we do, but that's because we get a lot of turndowns, I can tell you. Black faculty need to also go through the ranks. And that I'll tell you, the failure, just like me, to go through the ranks. I am an associate professor. I'm not a full professor. Oh, my work should be that. But why am I not a full professor? Because of all the other things I had to take the burden on of. I had to be on the Senate. I had to be on the Board of Governors. I had to be in the community. I didn't even have time to put the plan together to get my full professor, because there was so much. Our students need us. And we find ourselves, and this is not excuse making, it's just saying some of the burdens that fall on our Black, the few Black people, often results in sometimes are not focusing, while our white colleagues and our other colleagues are able to focus on their own careers. We saw the failure in terms of COVID-19, because research matters. Let me just say this again, because research and data are a valuation and a barometer of which lives are valued and which are devalued. Academic research is underinvested. And so when it came to COVID-19, we had no data. We could not help. We didn't have the wherewithal to convince Black people in this country to trust things like the vaccine, because their experience of this research has always been either they were excluded or harmed. Students and teaching, we have to make sure that we provide them with spaces that, where they are not excluded. This is one of the things I heard over and over from students. We don't feel comfortable. We don't feel we belong, whether it's in the classroom or in the cafeteria, because nothing about these places talk to us. It doesn't look like us. Nothing in the curriculum is being shared, and we don't have Black professors, and we don't have Black books, and we don't have spaces that says to the world, we belong here and we matter and our history is to be celebrated. We need to support their leadership. What, how, and who is in the curriculum and in student life, financial scholarships across the board, the entire system, the number of Black African students who said they tried to make jollof rice and it was horrible. It was just not us. And it just feels like we just don't belong. Which sports do they play? Which sports do they not play? And in community engagement, connecting the town, as they say, with the gown. How do we reach out to our communities? And I know at the Institute for Diaspora Research Engagement, my own institute, I'm just trying to go so long. We have refocused our efforts over the last years in focusing on engagement with the Black community. And we have a proposal before Simon Fraser to rename this institute into the Institute of Black and African Diaspora. And I ask for your support. Black resistance in education is an opportunity. Let's remember that. We need to resist, whether it's hiring Black faculty and students, because these are our future leaders and we must commit to them. We have seen Black resistance and the labor in the work of the BC Black Awareness Society. I say go to their websites. A lot of resources. This is an organization that has been here for a long time supporting Black people. There's an exhibit that they supported, which is now at the Royal BC Museum. Black people, Black led at the Royal BC Museum. And we still have a long way to go. Remember, these things are commitments. How do we sustain the pressure? I'm not trying to defeat anybody, but until we get to that mountaintop, we're not there. And sometimes you're climbing a mountain, and I always say we need to go up, but the incline matters. We need to go up a steep hill because we have a long way to go and a short time to get there. Let's make this as steep an incline as we can. We must go on and build on the work and remember the work that has been going on for decades in this province. I know every time somebody comes up with a great idea, they think it's new. Let me tell you, I'm getting to that age where I know how many people have tried and got exhausted by the process, but others have been there to take the mantle. Things are happening. SFU passed a motion to hire at least 15 faculty. And I love students. This was led by our students. They were bold, they were brave, and uncompromising. And our Black students led by other students. This was not just a Black student, although it was led by the Black students. The other students came around and said, this is not just about the Black students. I have been robbed of the right to know the Black history and contributions of Black scholarship and intellectual traditions. One young man said, I have been here and I've never been taught by a Black faculty. I feel robbed. We know things are going on. Hogan's Alley is involved with research. I'm also calling out to the Ontario Black Health Matters, who has put together a coalition at the University of Toronto. Hogan's Alley has been, if you haven't filled out our research here, please do, on Black hesitancy, being led by Gina O'Gilvie and Stephanie Allen from Hogan's Alley, and Monape, who is a research assistant, and others. We also know there's an Institute for the Study of Canadian Slavery that's being led by a number of Black scholars, including the scholar that I, Dr. Nelson, that I talked to you earlier. I will stop there. Thank you for your attention. And again, thank you so much for being here.
So that's our show today, folks. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Against the Current by CITR News, and we're here every Thursday at 3 p.m. bringing you local news. And stay tuned for more amazing programming.